Hello, hello. Just like Ilona usually starts. So, on again here with Ilona, and now today we have a new guest, Alexander Denison, who will introduce himself because the labels that he uses might change over time. Go ahead, Alexander.
Thank you, Anna. Just as I said, to me that's usually the most difficult part of any interview. It's because, you know, who am I? I mean, that's the question we will probably never know an answer. Or at least we can try to search for one. But I do have labels, right, which I put to myself. Entrepreneur, investor. My favorite one is maybe mentor. So that's what I enjoy the most, working with people. Well, I'm a family man, definitely. Father of two, husband. So these are, let's say, the typical labels. Yeah. I'm also now maybe soon to be a politician. We don't know that yet. So
ooh, running in the local elections this fall.
Yes.
Ooh. So this is the political campaign starting.
Yes, so that's why we're here, right? Oh, that's not that podcast. Okay.
almost. We could turn into that.
When are the elections? I'm a complete idiot. I'm just thinking about when in a month. But yes. Will it come out before or no?
Well, we'll see.
We'll see. Mm-hmm.
But it depends on what we talk about.
But besides the labels, what makes your heart sing? I'm going to ask a really nasty question here.
Yes, okay. That is a nasty question.
That's Ilona for you.
But what makes my heart sing? So definitely when I get to work with people one-on-one. Right. So that's one of my most favorite form. You know, typically we work about 50% business, 50% personal problems. Not problems, but let's call them challenges, right? Mm-hmm, And that's a really, let's say, interesting part of my job. I really, really enjoy being on stage.
Mm. Public speaker.
As a public speaker, I also have a band. So I like to perform on the band much more than practice in the band, right? So
singing or instrument?
I play double bass, so instrument, haven't started singing yet, who knows, let's see if I can put that label one day on myself, so I don't know yet.
I'm taking singing lessons.
Me too.
Ah, see?
Wow, solists and, you know, your band.
We actually need a singer, so...
I can only do Adele, so...
Okay. I can do
would
jazz.
That work with the bass?
Well, we do have a jazz band, by the way, so see.
Oh, nice.
So we'll see. But yeah, so these are the things that definitely bring me joy. Being on stage is one of the few places I really feel in the flow. Very difficult for me to be off the stage in the flow. So I feel I'm quite productive, but I don't really feel in the flow. And it changes the moment I step on the stage, really. Within seconds, I feel that I'm in the flow. So that brings me a lot of joy. And then, you know, my hobbies, which is one of the main hobbies, music, but also sports. So top of the head, yes.
That was a lot of labels that you don't see usually on LinkedIn.
It's not labels. I disagree. As you do know that I do disagree. What you were speaking about was high energy, what we were just talking about with Celia in the other podcast. Because when you are on the stage, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you are on the stage and you are in the flow, then you feel very high energy. Then you are basically a rock star.
Yes, very much so. And to the point where it actually takes time to calm down. Mm-hmm. So even if it's been a long day, so let's say I'm a head moderator of the event. And I'm on stage 8 hours in a row. I would say it takes me another 4 hours just to calm down. So yes, energy is definitely very high. And it doesn't go away right after the end. So
that's because adrenaline needs time to leave the building. So
yes.
But this reminds me actually of our visitor, Gert Burmeister, who is a YouTuber. Mm-hmm. Also has a PhD in law, like us, but enjoyed performing. And enjoyed performing so much that wanted to perform on a daily basis and is now doing YouTube and TikTok videos. Mm-hmm. Like doing the research as well for the content, but actually doing the videos and loving it. It is very high energy as well.
Mm-hmm. It is, but it also could be training. So at least that's my experience. I definitely couldn't do it every single day. So once or twice a week being on stage would be, I think, optimum for me. But every single day, I think it will be training. I haven't had the experience, but at least knowing myself as much as I do.
Well, you don't have to do a video every day. You can, you know, do a, because she also researches quite a bit in order to do one video. There has to be like really a lot of facts checked, a lot of like law that is in there, and a lot of the collection of the actual like circumstances, and then she will produce the content.
Good point. Yeah, but to be honest, I haven't really tried doing videos. I very much, so the main thing what I'm taking from being on stage is the interaction with the audience.
Okay.
It's very, very important to me. So I've tried to do, you know, these workshops on Zoom where you don't see the participants, and I don't like them. You know, even if I get paid, sometimes I say no, just because there's very little interaction with the audience. Some people even don't turn on their cameras. So I call it, you know, there's no exchange of energy. So it's very one-directional.
We're coming back to energy.
Yes,
yes we are. We just energy. Finished a talk where we were talking about energy. We were talking about feeling connected and, you know, spiritual side. But what you just said and how you introduced yourself, Alexandra, is exactly the point of our today's talk about what makes your heart sing, what drives you, how do you find your life path, how do you design your life. And I think that you mentioned just before the two magic words, the path with the heart.
Yes, so that's kind of, let's say, one of my favorite mottos is to be on the path with the heart, or to walk on the path with the heart. And
what does it mean for you?
Yes, so it means a lot of things, as usual. And I really like how one of my favorite authors, who are, you know, we never know if it's fiction books or there's a reality to it, but I like Castaneda. But I really like how he writes about the paths which we can be on during the lifetime, that none of those paths lead to anywhere. So the only difference between, and there's literally thousands of different paths we can take during our lifetime. So the question is, what's the difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the only difference, since none of them lead anywhere in any ways, right, is whether your heart is on it or not. Right? And so for me,
I'm getting Lucy the movie vibes, where she saw all of those paths and that were uniting everything else, and literally like thousands and millions of them that you can see, that you can pick, actually.
Oh, you mean where she got 100% of brain capacity,
yeah,
thanks to the drug.
But
I really like the movie, by the way. It plays with an idea that we're not using all of our potential.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it seems that the potential we're not using is not so much in the head, but much more in the heart. So, and I my feeling is that most of us are very good in the head, to the point where we forget what our intuition is saying, what our heart is saying, what our gut feeling is saying. And I feel that's where the potential actually lies.
Because we limit ourselves with rationalizing and going with the rules and going with the programming that we've had from childhood or the people that we surround ourselves with. Is that what you were talking about?
Yes. So it even has a word. It's called social conditioning, right? So,
yes, it
so,
is.
Yes. So very much so. So for me, path with the heart is a lot to do with the feeling. So how do I choose whether this path is path with the heart for me or not? Is a lot to do, much more to do with the heart than with the head. So as an example, I mentioned that I'm running for elections. I don't have a justification, by the way. So if you would ask me why, my answer would be, it feels that I need to do it, right?
Mm.
So the feeling is very strong. The pull is very strong. You know, I don't have specific agenda. I'm not giving out any promises. But I feel that I need to open the door and see what comes in, right? Very much based on the feeling, but the pull is very strong.
Is it like a now or never feeling, or is it like your triggered reaction to something that happened, or is it just an inner feeling that you know that you will regret this if you don't do it?
It's mostly inner feeling. I wouldn't say that I feel that we shouldn't live our lives regretting anything, more or less, right? Even if we do something wrong, I don't believe in regret. I believe in responsibility, right?
And it's plus, it was always a lesson anyway, so no regrets.
Yes, in a sense. Usually people who regret tend not to take responsibility, by the way. So it's a good, it becomes almost like a currency, the regret. Yes, making that choice to run for local elections was much more based on the feelings. So not that, you know, I'm afraid that I would regret it. And there's no specific trigger, I would say. Yes, so this is the pull part. But I do also feel there's like push. And the push is things what are happening, let's say, in our own country, but also worldwide, which I feel are also pushing me to that direction, right? So there's a lot of things which and processes that I feel that maybe are not, we are not on the best path, I would say. But this is more like pushing me towards taking an action, right? But the decision was based on the feeling, which is for me like a, like almost it feels like somebody's pulling you, right? You know, if you're in love, it's a very much pulling feeling, right? It's not like pushing, but it's you feel like as if there's like a force pulling you towards something similar.
But it, yeah, okay. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. What I think about, you know, politics.
Yes. Yes. No. That's not, but I just brought that as an example, not to put it on.
But like but my question, you partly answered it. You know, the push and the pull bit, that's again the duality that we're always faced with, you know, like this or that, here or there, right or wrong. But it's the push and pull, it's the pull bit that interests me. How do you know when you're being pulled? Because the push is clear. You read the signals of the horrible things happening that you disagree with, that you feel that you're being pushed towards some eventuality. But define the pull. How do you know that you're being pulled? How do you know?
How do you know that you're in love?
It's back to the spirituality again. Discussion, because you don't know. It's an inner feeling. It's for me. It's something that you instinctively know that this is me. This is mine.
But feelings are so corruption. Like
feelings are decisions anyway.
Yes, you either recognize that you want to go that direction and you justify it with a feeling. You say that, oh, I feel this is correct, or this is true, or this is mine, the words that you were using, my direction, the true direction.
So what I call it is, this is the, let's say, irrational side of life, right? So and why it's irrational is because we cannot rationalize it, right? So we cannot really measure it. But everybody who's, and I like, you know, using this analogy of being in love, because most of us have at least once in life, you know, experienced that. And so we know it very much, it's real, right? So if you ever have felt it, you know it's real.
You know it's there, but you can't touch it because it's not an object.
Yes. And you know it's irrational, so you don't know exactly where it's coming from, right?
Because you might be attracted to somebody who is completely opposite you, so it doesn't make sense, and all of that. So yeah, but yep. it's there nevertheless.
Yes. So and that's what I mean by being irrational, in the sense that we cannot really rationalize it, and I believe we shouldn't try, right? So that's where we lose the, let's call it, ability to listen to our feelings, is that we are trying to rationalize them, but they are in essence irrationalizable. I don't even know the word how to say it out loud. So I believe that's like when we loop back to where we started, like a lot of the potential is hidden in that. So I'm not saying that we shouldn't use our rational mind. Quite the opposite, we should use it, but we should add a layer to it, which is our heart, right? So and that's how we can in the end actually choose the path, which we can call a path with a heart. It's not called path with a brain, right? So path.
Some people do choose path with a brain, though.
Most of do, yes.
Most of us do. Yes. But path with a heart.
Conditioning, yeah.
Sorry, I'm jumping in. Path with a heart. It sounds like what you are referring to is the subconscious, which is a sea of stuff out there, which we have no idea why we do, why we like, why we love the things that we do and people we like, love, etc. But it, to me, it sounds like it's based on a belief that what you're doing is right.
I guess you can put it that way as well. I agree with that, let's say, description. But I always say, you know, first of all, I'm not afraid to say that I believe in a lot of things, right, which I have no way of proving whether that's true or not. So if my wife says she loves me, I believe her, right? I cannot measure it. I mean, she might be making it up, but I choose
five love languages. It can be measured, but anyway,
five languages is a different tool. It's not for measuring love, but I mean, but in essence, right? So I choose to believe in a sense.
Choice. And, yes, I like that.
And I definitely choose to believe in myself, right? So you're
capable, that you can do it, that you should do it, that now or never, and that you're going to do it.
But I trust myself in essence, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I might not like the outcomes of certain, let's say, decisions I make. But to me, it doesn't matter if the process how I got to that situation has been, let's say, impeccable in a sense. And impeccable for me means giving your best. Giving your best means that my thoughts, my words, and my actions are in line. I mean, it's one and the same, right? So it's...
Authenticity is what you mean, yes.
Well, yeah, that's another word.
Authenticity.
That's another word.
Sincerity, maybe.
Or sincerity. I like the word impeccability because it, being impeccable is very, very different than what people usually mean. But when I say, you know, you should
give
your
best. As in not being able to be impeached. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very different than if I would say, you should give your best. You know, you should always... give your best, which most people understand that you should always give everything you have. And this is very different from giving your best, right? Being impeccable in a sense for me is a formula how I evaluate how I got to the certain situation, certain decisions. And one of them is making sure that what I feel, what I think, what I say and what I do is one and the same, right? So I'm not gonna, let's say one thing to another thing. Very often people think one thing and they say completely different thing. And sometimes we have a very strong feeling about something and yet we either suppress it with our thoughts or we end up doing something which is completely the opposite. So for me, this alignment between those different layers is being impeccable. And that's it.
Right. To me, what you said sounds like being congruent. Because impeccable, mm-hmm. Again, lawyers, as you said, once a lawyer, always a lawyer, unfortunately. Impeccable means that it cannot be impeached, as in I find no fault in this, which to me is closer to perfection rather than being congruent and authentic. So that's why. To you, impeccable might mean something else. Because, you know, it's like, how is this? Oh, this is impeccable. That means I find no fault in it for me.
But, okay, I like how it sounds, although, like we were discussing in the episode of spirituality, I, as a lawyer, want to define stuff. And like you used the word right, which, you know, again,
subjective,
right and wrong. Mm-hmm. And very difficult to define. You have to have a set of rules, you know, when it abides by the set of rules, it is right. And if it doesn't, it's wrong. And I think like with the heart or even these different layers, like in our previous episodes, we've talked about like the ego and the chatterbox in our head that sort of constantly wants you to do stuff in a certain way. So I find it's very difficult to align these layers with the right path and choose the right path and choose the right decision, because you said that all the feelings are also decisions or all the beliefs. Like, do I believe my wife is also a decision? So all the steps are decisions, the beliefs are decisions, but the decisions are all guided by either, you know, the ego, the chatterbox, or something else where you try to get away from the ego or the chatterbox that guides you. So I think it's all sort of so mushy and so messy. And how you said earlier when we started, before we started this podcast, that there is a school. There is a school that is teaching this to, I understand, grown-ups. Mm. So how do you teach that if it's so mushy and messy?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So maybe I will start from the beginning, in the sense that I don't believe there's a right or wrong path, right? There's different paths, different decisions, which gives us different experience in life. So so I tend, or I try not to use that word as much as possible. It still slips out a lot of the times, but I tend not to use the word, you know, this is right way to do it, or this is the wrong way to do it. It's just a different way to do it, and that gives you a different experience. And if we have already lived a few years on the earth, it's we tend to know what kind of experiences we like and what kind of experiences we don't like. So let's say when I'm facing a decision I need to make, one of the questions I can ask myself, and that's also something which, so we teach a set of tools in the school. One of them is how to make decisions, and one of the tools which is extremely effective when you're facing a decision and you don't know exactly which way you want to go, is you can ask yourself, so what kind of experience I want to have out of this, right? And as soon as you can define what's the experience you would like to get, the answer becomes very clear how you need to decide in order to get that experience, what you're looking for, right? And the focus is on the experience and not on the result, right? So in business, very often the problem we see that people are very results driven, yes, mm-hmm. and results are very rarely under our control, and that's where you lose all the joy in the process, right? So you try to get to certain results, certain, let's say, sales numbers, or you need to raise certain amount of money, you want to go on very specific markets. So you're very much results driven, very much focused on the result. And usually what happens is that you forget about the experience and you lose joy in the process, right? So if you make a step back and think, okay, so what kind of experience do I want to have building my own company, for example, the game changes, right? So it's not anymore about how many clients we have, but it's about what do I want to experience? And then that starts to influence my decision-making process, right? So that's, for example, one way. So, and when we talk about decisions, there's definitely no right or wrong decisions, at least in business, right? So I cannot say that one is wrong, one is right, but they will definitely give you different results. And it brings you to the different places, it gives you different experiences, right? So rather than asking...
Can I play the devil's advocate?
As
I often do. Right or wrong, but there is such a thing as humane and inhumane. As in, you can still take certain decisions, even in business. I don't know, letting 100 people go or whatever, mm-hmm. Letting somebody go on a suspicion of theft rather than proved, etc. So like a humane versus inhumane, you can still tap into that decision making, and that is right or wrong. You can still somehow link it back to. But what you were talking about before, it feeds into with what we've been writing about in our book. It is about how you design your life experiences, because if you think about life in general, not just pitching or in business, then the same end result for all of us, death. Depends. I'm not being morbid. Depends. You can upload your consciousness in about a couple of years. But if you think about it, then the end result for everybody is the same. Virtually, let's just agree, 99% that it is, which means that you can only enjoy the ride. You can only design how you want to have that experience, how you want to have that process, how you want to feel joy or be miserable, or what kind of people you want to surround yourself with, and all of that. So it echoes on a larger scale of not just what you want out of this experience and out of this decision, but also what you want out of life.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. Yeah.
But you still sort of have this premise that we need to learn how to make decisions with our heart instead of like making decisions on basis of or using some other category or organ. Like, I mean, why would we have the premise that what we are doing is actually not correct or like right, using those words, like that we're not making decisions by like using our heart? Why would we presume that we're not doing that all along?
At least for me, it's the experience. I'm not saying that, you know, making decisions either with your only using your head or only using your heart, that's also possible, or using both of them in balance is a right way or wrong way to do it. But I can at least say what is a better way for myself, right? So it's a better or a right way for me. I'm not capable of saying, how is it for you, right? So we can have a chat and we can have a mentoring session and I can develop a picture of you and say what I think could be the case. But I would never say that, you know, I think that's the way it is. But I do believe that I can say about myself. So I've lived a life where I've made only rational decisions, and that led me to a place where I didn't like to be at all, right? So I have a very good experience saying, okay, so that way does not work for me. And that's another tool which we use actually, we teach in the school is to ask yourself a simple question. If you're in a situation, does it work for me or does it not work for me, right? So if it's working for you, great. I wouldn't change anything if it's working. If it's not working, however, right? When I would start asking myself questions, okay, what is exactly not working, right? So then we come back to the place where very lot of people actually do come to a realization, as myself, that living your life rationally is not working for them. And it was definitely not working for me, even though I could perfectly do it for 10 years in a row and get very good results, by the way. So when we were raising our investment funds, doing investments, I've done over 100 investments, helped a lot of companies completely only using my head and only using my rational mind, and completely draining myself in the process and not having any joy in the end doing what I was doing. So it is possible. A lot of us do it that way.
But it's very one-sided, isn't it, when you only use one type of decision-making?
At least today, I say that that's not the path I want to be on anymore, right? Mm-hmm. I do have the experience. I haven't had the experience where I let go of rational mind completely, right? So I know a few people who think that everything what's out here, everything which is materialized, doesn't matter, there's no value in it.
That's going to the other extreme, isn't it?
Exactly. And I don't believe that's the case either, right? So I believe that it's very much matters what's visible, what we can touch, as much as things which are not visible, such as love, right? That's not visible, even though there are certain actions which show our love, as you said, in 5 love languages, right? Mm-hmm. So I've been to one extreme. I haven't been to another extreme. So I don't know what it feels not to use your head at all.
Like be only intuitive and not look at the material side, but only go with what your, inner self tells you or some voice whispers to you.
For example, yes.
Something like that.
But I feel like, setting up a school for something seems like a result or even like a solution to a problem. And right now I've heard the word joy, that there was no joy. You using your rational mind, made decisions, were on a path with your brain, ended up in a place where you didn't have enough joy or at all joy, or it wasn't, I don't know, predominantly governed by joy. Or what was the problem that you identified, and then you thought that the solution is that we all have to learn how to do decisions based on other categories?
Again, I don't believe we all have to. So I believe the path is different for everyone, but there's a few things what I do believe could be helpful, at least for many people, right? But not for everybody, definitely not. So for me, it was not only the lack of joy, but what happened to me is, you know, let's call it the classical case of burnout. In my case, quite heavy. So I ended up in the hospital, I ended up in a psychiatry, right? So, and what I then learned that no money in the world could get me out of that situation, right? And I was at the point where I would have gladly given away everything I had just not to feel the way I was feeling. Also everything what I did back then with the doctors, with psychologists, and like literally nothing helped until I met my mentor. And then we had one mentoring sessions, and I made bigger progress than half a year in therapy. So, and then I understood, okay, so I found what works for me, right? Mm-hmm. Very, very clearly. And to me, the key in the beginning was starting taking responsibility for my own life. So it sounds, you know, how can it be? You were an entrepreneur, very successful investor, et cetera, right? And how can it be that you were not taking the responsibility? The reality was that I didn't like to take responsibility in the situations which had outcomes which were not good for me. Those were the situations where I ran away, literally, starting with my own family, leaving my little kids home, and doing, you know, 80 hours work weeks, and etc. So whenever I was facing
you used substitution and distraction as coping techniques in order to avoid
certain
the hard
things.
Bits.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So for me, that was the very first step. I needed, okay, so I understood I need to also take responsibility for the situation I'm in, right, at that moment. And this is where, for me, the change started to happen, right? And that's how we also later actually came to the place where we started the school together with the mentor and a few other people. Was that we actually built it for ourselves. We didn't build it for other people. I mean, it's open. Anybody wants to join, you're welcome to join. But we don't advertise it a lot. We have something like 50 people, I guess, currently from many countries. But we built it in essence for ourselves. So to build the mechanism which would help us to live the lives how we like to live them. And we just made it also open for other people who like to join. So that's how it started, actually, yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And sounds fascinating.
How long has the school been operating? Is there, like, I'm sort of trying to now ask, are there any good results? Are there metrics? Are there KPIs?
Very good. So again, you know, trying to measure something which is irrational, which is your subjective feeling of, how you perceive your quality of life is a very difficult thing, right? So we also work with a lot of entrepreneurs. Sure, I can show you numbers how one company went from 6 million revenue to 12 million revenue in 1 year during our mentoring when we were working with the management. Another company who went, you know, from 20 employees to 150 employees in 1 year during we were mentoring the management. But to be honest, you know, to say that was thanks to us, I don't know. You know, I do feel we had an influence, but how we measure, for example, the impact which we have is whether people like to stay or they like to go away. And when we talk about companies which we have worked, anyone who came in started mentoring. So we usually started with 1 year. To do any changes, actually, you need quite a lot of time. So it does not happen with 2 months or two sessions. So we started with 1 year. A vast majority actually prolonged for another year. And out of those, a majority prolonged for the third year, right? So
But eventually they have to become independent, and I see that always as a good thing. I mean, you've given your influence, how you defined it, and off they go, sort of, to the world.
In a sense, you could say that, or, you know, if I would bring it the parallel from a romantic relationship, you know, it would be as good as saying, you know, in the end, I shouldn't talk to my wife because we have already talked about everything. You know.
No, but do the parallel with the kids then.
Well, the parallel with the kids, it seems like, you know, storks, babies out of the nest, go, shoo. Mm-hmm. But what you're talking about, Alexandra, is actually partnering and co-creation of somebody's life with having somebody to talk to. If I understood you correctly, yes?
Yes, in a sense. So I do get the point what you're bringing, right? So that's exactly how we did in an accelerator, right? So we took in young
chicks.
Startups, chicks. We put them into an incubator, gave them warmth in the form of money, right? And and knowledge. And then off you go, right? So the essence of what we do in school is very different. We actually build relationships. So it's we don't have any promise in terms of, you know, we make your business grow. No, I mean, it might happen as a side effect, and very often it does happen as a side effect. But that's not our promise. Our promise is that we can help you increase your personal power. That's it. Simple as that. And that's our vision, right? So that's what we want to achieve.
But sorry to jump in again, but personal power, you don't mean ego, obviously, but do you mean personal power as in personal reach, network, impact, the way that you are, the energy that you bring? What do you mean by increased personal power?
That's a good question, because it's a really big word, right? So it has a...
Because empowerment, again, is a terminology which is different for different people. So
yes, to me, your personal power is whatever you understand under it, right? So the question is whether you feel that it's increasing or it's decreasing. So for me, a lot of personal power came from the fact that I started opening my heart, right? So which, for example, means I started saying things what I was actually thinking, right? One of the persons I actually opened my heart only after 10 years being in marriage was my wife, right? I realized that up to that point, it was actually quite, you know, closed and sealed off, right? And I feel a lot of personal power in doing that, right? I'm not more productive. I'm not making any more money. But my relationship is very, very different compared to what it was before. And that feels powerful, right? To you, personal power could mean something completely different, right? And that's kind of the point, is that everybody's experience is unique in a sense. There's a lot of commonalities, and we are much more alike than we would like to think. People, I mean, we have more in common with a random person than the differences, even though we don't like that notion at all.
So what I'm hearing is more power is become a better human compared to who you were before.
In a sense, yeah. But in your own terms, right?
On your own terms,
according to your own measurements.
Yeah, because, you know, being human, being the common denominator, but being better than yourself is very individual. So.
Yes. But something you mentioned earlier, I do think was extremely important. You said, you know, there's no right or wrong decisions, but there could be, let's say, harmful or evil or whatever.
Inhumane.
Yes, that's the word you used. How we like to look at it is that there's life-supportive and life-destructive decisions and actions we can do.
That's the same thing, what we mean.
In the sense, yes. So, but there is a but in that as well, is that what can be life supportive for me could be life destructive for you. So it cannot, there's no absolutes in that sense, right? So for some
it's
people,
it's a very difficult life to leave, especially for lawyers, when there are no absolutes.
Yes.
Definitions.
And you said you're not a lawyer anymore. So
yes, I am not. So easier for me, but not easier for Anna.
But in a sense, you know, for somebody it could be life supportive to actually start talking, and for somebody it could be life supportive to shut up. Right. And very, very different actions, but in the context of your life, it could be exactly the polar opposite, right? So again, there's no absolutes, in at least in that sense. But that is one question which for me is very important to ask, whether what I'm doing is life supportive or it's life destructive. And we don't want to be life destructive unless I choose so, right?
And also, there's always some sort of moral flexibility, as in, if you combine it with the rationalization bit, then you can always convince yourself or let yourself see it in the polar opposite. I'll give you an example. When you fire somebody, I'm not saying you, but for example, somebody fires somebody, then it can be seen for the person who's doing the firing to be life destructive, because he's, you know, or she is seeing as doing harm to somebody else. But it can be life supportive for the other person, which could be a chick kind of, you know, going and getting out of the nest and doing something better and getting even a better job and rethinking their life and all of that. But even for the person who is viewing something as you know, life destructive, they could see it from the other person's point of view and they could revisit their attitude. So there, again, like you said, there are no absolutes, but do you teach also moral flexibility or not really?
Not according to that terminology. Let's put it that way. But yes, in that sense, sure. So how I would put it, right, is that you need to make, or you can choose to make, life supportive decisions based on the context of your life. And if you are truly believe that this is life supportive, we shouldn't actually
for me
mm-hmm. Yes, I shouldn't actually start guessing or assuming what's the effect on the other person, right? So if I truly believe this is life supportive, that's how I should execute it, right? I can bring you an example from last week. Yes, was that so? For a while, I played in two bands, right? So mm-hmm. one is a jazz band, another one is a pop band, mm-hmm. and I wasn't really, you know, enjoying the experience in the pop band. So the music is not good for the double bass. You should be playing electric bass. So
and you play double bass.
I play double bass, so it was not a good fit for me. But I felt, you know, that I'm letting them down. If I step down, they don't have a bass player. So I was postponing the decision until 1st of September, when I decided, okay, you know, I need to say goodbye because I want to focus on the other band. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey guys, you know, I'm not continuing. And that's my decision. And then a guitar player in the band said, oh, interesting. I was, you know, just thinking to pick up the bass.
Hmm.
Right. So we had two guitar players, mm-hmm. Which is one too many. and even though at that moment I felt I was letting the team down, but I felt that decision was a right decision for me, a life supportive decision for me.
And also, as it happens, life supportive for them, because you were making room for somebody else to take the opportunity.
Exactly. And later came out that he didn't want to speak up, right? Because we already had a bass player, right? So, and if he would have said, you know, I would like to play bass, then we're in a decision like who gets to do it and etc. Right? So for me, this is one example how we should not assume mm-hmm. the effect on the other people. We actually never know. So the only person that can be responsible in this lifetime is me.
Mm-hmm.
So if I live my life in a life supportive way, I believe it has the similar effect on the other people. So that's what I believe in, right?
And that's the ownership as well that you're talking about, isn't it?
You mean responsibility?
Yes, taking responsibility for your own life, that it's nobody else's business but yours.
Yes, that's something I truly believe in, I would say, right? So I need to take full responsibility, which, I mean, we don't have the time today, which also means that, you know, how can I take full responsibility when I'm a 5-year-old kid? Or how can I do that being now 40 and take responsibility going back to the past, which happened 35 years ago, right? So it's a really interesting conversation. I believe it's possible, but it goes out of scope of I feel today's.
Nothing is out of scope. Everything is fine. But about kids, they actually know much better nowadays than you do what's good for them. So kids, I'm thinking about mine, who has no problem telling me no about certain things and keeping his boundaries and knowing exactly what's good for them. So,
but that's the thing.
We're the ones struggling with should I, shouldn't I, and what's my life path and you know, what's really good for me to do.
I am closer to 50 than 40. And I would say that most of what I sort of notice, and you notice what you're looking for, right, is that we should become more like we were when we were kids. Mm-hmm. And there, like, I've been struggling for the past, I don't know, 10 minutes, ever since you brought up the word personal power and increasing personal power. Like, power in my legal world often leads to conflict, power struggles, power
imbalances,
eagerness to have power, and like politics,
territory,
power corrupts. So people tend to, like, if I talk about personal power or what I imagine would power at all as a motivator, is still, like you said, self or life sustaining. It is very, very sort of selfish in my head and in my understanding and heart, and anything that leads as a heart for me is not sort of, maybe not the opposite of like what I'm seeking as a, if I go for power, but still, I would say I liked more when you started, you said joy and the kids comparison. Kids are motivated by joy, like whatever makes us happy, whatever sort of is fun, whatever is joyful, whatever is
making your heart sparkle.
Yeah. Whatever is sort of adventure or new sometimes.
But at the same time, your heart powers your body.
Well, I was about to ask, like, what kind of supermarket are you buying your kids from?
We're manufacturing them out of my body.
Yes, they come through us. Yes.
Ah, that's how it
yes.
works.
Yes.
No, but because that's not how I would describe kids. I mean, kids are very, up to certain age, they are very, let's say, genuine, but they're not motivated only by joy. They're motivated by many things, and kids could be extremely manipulative. I mean, extremely manipulative, and it's not
they
easy.
Try their boundaries, but then it's your turn to kind of laugh it off and set them straight.
No, sure. I mean, again, that's a whole different. That's why I was asking, where do you get your kids from? Because
the same supermarket.
Same supermarket. Yeah, joy is. A much bigger part for kids than it is to us. And in that sense, I do agree that we should try to be more than like we were when we were little, mm-hmm. right? So, mm-hmm. And kids are very much following their feelings in a sense, right? Hey, it feels like I want to go and ride with a bicycle, right? And they go, off they go. And then sometimes
they don't think that I can't or yes. I shouldn't or what will somebody else say or is my bike really as good as somebody else's? They don't give a flying fuck about that. They just beep. Go and do, beep. they just go and do.
Up to a certain age, right?
Up to a certain, no. It depends, because if you can keep them in that same momentum, if you can help them see that, yes, there's all the things that you learn. Yes, there's some logic and rationalization and maths, how you do certain decisions. But don't forget that bit. Don't forget to be opportunistic. Opportunistic is good. Great is good. All of that. And don't forget, you know, based on your feelings to do stuff. When you give them that balance that you can do this, but you can also do that. And you just, in the moment, you kind of, you just need to decide how you feel like deciding. Mm-hmm. And if you keep, you know, growing those humans to be bigger humans, then you get normal humans.
I guess.
We're not normal humans.
We had this rework. Damage thing. What was the PhD definition?
Permanent head damage. That.
But how I look at it is that there's many qualities which kids possess, right? Which are also extremely helpful when we're adults. Yet, at the same time what happens as when we are kids. We go through experiences, right?
Not all of them good, because it frustrates you and you get emotional, not necessarily with a good enthusiastic emotions, but also others.
For example, right? And then we develop certain strategies, right? One of them is lying. A toddler cannot lie, not possible. So it's a learned behavior, right? But the kids pick it up very, very quickly. So they start lying without even, you know, they don't do it on purpose. It's a survival mechanism, right? And it works for them because it helps them to survive in those moments, and that's completely fine. So when we run into the problems is that if we don't realize that we have picked up certain, let's say, strategies while being kids, and they were useful back then because it helped us to go through situations, right, in life. But if we now, as an adult, use the same strategies, then we usually and very often end up in the places which we don't like. And lying is one of the good examples. So why do we lie? Very easy, because I did something, and then my mommy said, you know, I don't like what you did, but I did it with all my heart, right? So in order, you know, to be likable for my parents, I need to change my behavior. So I mm-hmm. need to lie, right? So I need to start lying, because something which kids very much want is to be loved by their parents.
Mm-hmm. Loved, like, not be punished, all sorts of different reasons for why people lie.
So that strategy works at that time, right? So I start behaving in a certain way, I start taking on the social conditioning, and I get then approval from the environment, from my friends, etc. And that's all fine, because, you know, if you're a 7-year-old, that's how you actually live your life, right? So it depends a lot on the parents and what you teach them, but in the end, we shouldn't worry about it too much. However, if we come to become adults, then I do believe we need to recognize those patterns, because they are could be extremely life destructive if we don't recognize the patterns which we have picked up in
why you do what you do, and whether this is actually helping or hurting you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But is there a equation between self survival, like these survival techniques, as you say, mm-hmm. and self sustainable, or like the objective of self sustainable, like decisions, as you said, which was the antonym of self destructive?
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, lying was survival technique.
Mm-hmm. We're all geared for survival.
Sustaining is also.
Life sustaining is always, all of our behavior is aimed at survival. Mm-hmm. All of our behavior.
Aren't they like equations? Like, aren't they the same? Like, aren't they in parallel?
You could say so, but I would maybe even look at different angles. So the problem in itself, so the lying is not so much the problem, but the whether you do it knowingly or not. So if, let's say, the example is that there's a person on the street and asking me, give me all your money, right? Asking, how much money do I have? I would lie my ass off, you know. I would say I have €5, right? I would do anything to distract the person and then run away, right? So that would be my strategy in that situation, right? So the problem is not lying in itself. So lying could be extremely useful. It could be even life supportive in certain situations. So I don't see anything wrong telling my kids there's Santa Claus, because it brings so much joy, right? But it's straight out lying, right?
Maybe. All the kids listening, this is not true.
This is, yes. Maybe.
I picked up a good gimmick a while back, where the parents can explain to their kids that there are two different universes, you know, multiverses being part of Marvel and all of that. There are two different universes. There's a universe where if you believe that something is true, it's true. And if you don't believe in something that is, you know, you believe that something is not true, then you get that. And it's your choice in which universe you live. And then they get to choose whether there is a Santa or there isn't a Santa. Depends of, you know, whether they want the presents or not.
thank God my parents didn't give me that choice. I just got Santa Claus and it was so funny. I really liked, you know, waiting for a Santa Claus. So my kids also had a Santa Claus. But coming back to the point is that lying is a tool. So we shouldn't blame the tool. That where it gets life destructive is that when we are lying, not because we are, let's say, afraid of how the other person reacts, and when we stay in the relationships which we should have left long time ago, mm-hmm. or we should stay at a job for let's say all the wrong reasons, but not wrong reasons in absolute term, but the wrong reasons for you. So when we just keep lying, so the problem is that the motivation behind it is not life supportive, right? But lying could be life supportive at the same time. But the pattern we are picking up as being the kids is using in a not life supportive way usually, right? So, and that's why we lie. And it's most people don't like to accept it, but most people lie most of the time. And if you can accept that fact, I can promise you, it took me a long time to think about it, to see what my experience is, to observe people, to observe how life is. When I heard it, I came to the same conclusion that most people lie most of the time. And so now I have a choice not to accept it or to accept it. And the moment you accept it, the life gets so much easier. And you're not taking things anymore personally. You don't see lying as, you know, something that people do on purpose to make you feel bad. It's usually nothing to do with you. So it's just so much easier. That's the word I would use. You know, it doesn't bring me a lot of joy to know what people lie.
But it's just something that you have to factor in.
Yes.
You know, bringing a parallel of watching House, then he said as well, the fictional character, that everybody lies. So that's effectively the same. And what it means is, yes, if you have awareness of that and if you can factor that in to your behavior and other people's behavior, then you can be kind. Then you can be mindful of that fact that everybody does do that, because it's a learned behavior that we all learned, whether we wanted to or not. But also it brings with ownership the consequences of your actions. Mm-hmm. I can give you two examples. One, just from recent couple of weeks, is letting go of the fact that you are going to some social gathering with people that you don't give a damn about, that you actually shouldn't go to that kind of social gathering, because you are lying to yourself when you're telling yourself that I should go there because that would make me look good. No, you're going there because you want to belong. You're going there because you don't want to feel left out. But not going there would be more self-sustaining, because you don't give a shit about those people. And it would be it would be more honest not to go. It would be more self-sustaining not to go. And the second thing that I did just last week is I thought that I told my family that I hate cooking, and apparently I didn't. Only my husband knew, but now everybody does. And the beauty of that is they know that it's difficult for me, and they're now helping. So that's great.
But this is interesting. Both you and me, we replaced the word life-sustaining with the self-sustaining. Mm-hmm. And Alexander is the only one using it.
Life-sustaining.
Like this life and self for us.
That's because for people in survival mode, it's still self-sustaining.
Yeah, or self-sustaining only.
But for me, it's almost one and the same. They're synonyms in a sense, because if you are, self sustaining, and if you uplift yourself, that's something that I also really truly believe, is that if you uplift yourself, you have the same effect on every person in your life, right? So you uplift others together with yourself, right? So it becomes the same, right? Through being, you know, good to yourself, that's the best you can do for people in your life, is actually, you know, being good for yourself or to yourself. in the first order. And then, you know, if you have the energy, then, you know, take care of the other people as well, if they want it, right? And not force them to have something which they not necessarily want. So sorry
to jump in. I just had an idiotic flashback to a Hindi movie. I used to live in London and watch Hindi movies with my best Bollywood. So there's an expression of their happy wife, happy life. So it's along the lines of if you are happy with yourself and you show it to other people, then other people are also happier because of it, because you are being true to yourself. So keeping yourself actually happy.
Are you sure this is Bollywood? I think the origin, this is...
No, there's a hand gesture and everything. Happy wife, happy life. It's from a specific
one. British.
Kuch Na Kaho. I can tell you the movie.
Well, I think it originates somewhere else though.
Probably does, yeah. But what I'm hearing, Alexandra, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, what I'm hearing is through these ABC adjustments of, you know, ABC because there's some basis that you need to accept about yourself, some things. There are some things that you need to start doing completely differently. But there are small bits and small decisions of how you go about shaping your life, right?
Yes. What was the question?
what we've been talking about is for us the interest is how do you design your life so as you know there isn't just a huge goal or mini goals or how you are actually happy, you know, bring joy, to link back to what Anna said before. And your school, the Path with a Heart, is you should listen not just to the rational side, but also to the subjective and subliminal side to yourself, the intuition and your feelings. But that takes the form of decisions.
Yes.
And that shapes into the life that we have, doesn't it?
Yes. So one of, let's say, main philosophies, if we could put it that way, right, is that this is another thing what I truly believe in, is that as long as we live here in this physical world, I believe it's not the only world that exists. And what I mean by that, I mean there's things which we cannot see with our, you know, eyes. But we know that it does exist, such as feelings. But as long as we live here and we operate in a physical plane, I truly believe that the value is only created through actions, right? So whatever I decide, whatever I want to change in me, or however I want the world to interact with me, it needs to have an action behind it. So the only value which we create in this world is through action, right?
Because you're given a physical body through which you can take those actions. And
yes,
if you just sit at home and think all of those beautiful thoughts or, you know, reassessing thoughts, but you never tell anybody that you love them, or you never tell anybody that you want to change your behavior or have revalued a situation, they will never know. So you need to take that action step for something to change.
So that's one of the main principles, right? So if we talk about growing your personal power, that means that your actions need to change, right? So growth, by the way, and that's another principle which is sometimes maybe hard to grasp, is that what we believe is that growth always means change, always. So instead of asking, you know, how do I want to grow myself, the questions what I'm asking is that so how do you want to change, or what do you want to change in your life, right? So that becomes growth, right? So that always means that there must be some action which follows, right? So you make a decision. Okay, so this is what I want to change. I want to be more honest, or I want to be more open. I want to start, you know, expressing my thoughts as they are. I want to lie less.
I want to learn how to sing.
I want, yes. So, and unless now it turns into an action, there's no value created in a sense, right? So it's not that we always have to create value, but it needs to end up in some kind of action. Sometimes it's words, right? Sometimes it's something what you do physically, right? So it's not always that we need to move physical objects from one place to another, but there needs to be some kind of actions. Otherwise
it's wishful thinking, because if you're sitting there and thinking, I'm using the example of singing because that's on as my thing. But if you're just sitting there thinking, oh, I wish I could sing, but if you don't actually go and book that singing lesson, nothing's going to happen. Yeah,
for example.
No change.
Yeah. Or at least start singing in the shower, you know.
I mean, or in the car.
Yeah.
As you
like something, you know. So it needs to... So you know, I don't necessarily like that word because it some people don't like these words, but it needs to materialize itself, right? So somehow into this world where we live in, right? Mm-hmm. And this is only possible through action, right? So that's pretty much the only tool we have. Unless you can, you know, get things out of thin air. I don't have that. I don't know how to do that. Maybe there are people.
Dalai Lama, apparently.
Yeah,
but
Dalai Lama, yeah, perhaps. There needs to be action in the end. So that's how the circle comes complete.
So what I hear is the self-sustaining and life-affirming, conscionable choices that form a path that you actually like and that brings you joy. Is that what you are teaching in the school?
So I feel we're too much focused on the joy. So that was just, you know, opening one example, which I brought. I think joy has enormous, you know, role in our lives, but I believe so do all the other emotions, such as anger, sadness, and fear. So joy is one thing, but bringing an example. So I really like the example of Winston Churchill, right? Who was, I think, probably the best prime minister for that time. Mm-hmm. But he hated his job. And yet I feel that was his path with the heart. He couldn't have done what he did and not being on the path with the heart. But it's a well-known fact that he didn't like the role, right? So I don't feel that... So if we talk about being on the path with the heart, what feels right to me... doesn't necessarily need to bring you joy. It could be that, you know, you don't like it at all, but you feel it's the right thing to do, right? So I don't feel, to be honest, that I'm gonna, you know, enjoy politics, but I feel it's something I need to do right now, right? So, but I, you know, I don't like this public exposure, asking questions, being called names, given labels, all of that, which potentially could come with it, right? I don't think anybody enjoys that, to be honest. But yet I feel that for many people, it is the path to be on, right? So it's not only joy, but it's again, coming back to the feeling is that you have this, you know, inner certainty that this is it, you know, this is what I need to do. So I don't know why you're guys doing this podcast, but there must be some kind of, you know, rational behind it. But I feel it's more than just rational, right? So probably when it would be a very rational decision, it would make much more sense for you to, you know, help your clients with legal battles, because it would bring so much more money in than doing any podcast. But that's not what you're doing, right? So it's not especially rational, and it can bring you joy, but it's also hard work, right? So it's not only about joy, because if I feel that's one of the traps which a lot of, let's say, self-development programs have. And I call it the trap, because you can never reach, you know, the state of being where you're always happy. Not going to happen, right? So you only feel yourself happy because every now and then you feel yourself miserable, and you have a comparison point. Otherwise, you would never know what happy means.
There's a sinusoid thing, you know, like you're happy, you're sad, you feel something in between. And there's the perfect neutral as well, which some people are very scared of. But yeah, I get what you're saying, is that all emotions are valid and we're experiencing them. And even if you are on a hard path, but you feel like this is the right thing for me to do, or right thing for me and the world to do at this moment, then it's your feeling, and then you are going to be pursuing it. But yeah, when you're learning something, when you are transcending, when you're developing it, might not be joyful all the time, but this, for me, this is absolute joy. It's not hard work. I love talking to lovely people about all
You're
sorts of things.
You're a good liar.
Wow.
Yes, so, since everybody lies, absolutely. No, truly, this for me is rest.
I was just
like listening to Alexander and thinking, okay, this sounds exactly like the book I'm reading right now.
did I write it?
No, it's actually by Jesper Parva, the guru from Huma. Well, he writes exactly about this, that you shouldn't chase happiness. You should chase peace in your heart. But this is what you said, that all the layers have to align. And it sounded like the same, like, you know, they sort of are at peace with one another.
But you know how many people are, shockingly, a lot of people are terrified of the neutral gear and of having peace in their hearts. Because of what you said before as well, we need to constantly keep doing something. And it's the do that is pulling us away from that inner peace.
You mean that the motivating feeling is this dissatisfaction with your current state, so
yes,
you are pulled towards something else or pushed towards something else.
Yeah.
So yes, it does come back to the motives, right? So the question is, you know, at least for me, in the end, not so much what is exactly what I do, but what's the reason why I'm doing it, right? So that's what I'm trying to answer when I start a new venture or when I start something new, right, in my life. Like, what's the reason I want to do it, rather than, you know, what is exactly what I'm going to do about it. So, in that sense, action matters, but the idea is not that, you know, we should do more. But the idea is that unless there's action in the end, then you know, nothing changes. And that I can absolutely promise. You know, if you don't take action, absolutely nothing will change. But I really like you know, this thought that you should be chasing peace rather than happiness. And and why is that? I feel one thing what would actually, you know, make quality of life for a lot of people higher is that if we would start looking at emotions neutrally, right? So looking at emotions as it would be compass, right? So and that's what I believe emotions are. It's pointing to a certain direction. So there's four directions. One is joy, but there's also sadness, there's also anger, there's also fear. And all of them are in essence neutral, right? So, you know, if the compass is pointing south, you're thinking, oh, it's pointing south. You're not thinking, oh, this sucks. You know, I don't like that direction. This is a stupid compass showing me south. And if we could, you know, start looking at our emotions in the same way, in a neutral way, right?
In an objective way, like a compass, as you said.
In a sense, yeah. Oh, it's anger. So I wonder, why am I angry right now? So I was extremely angry last week when I went to Narva. So I was called to come and give inspirational speech to students, and nobody showed up. Well, it turned out they, you know, forgot to do any advertisement that the event happens, and I was angry, right? So I was looking, okay, so I'm angry, right? So and that's okay, you know. Currently, the compass is pointing at anger, and anger, as I define it now, is that anger for me means that the emotion is, you know, I want to fight, you know, so there's a desire to fight. So, and now if I look at, okay, so anger, I want to fight. So what am I fighting for? Right. So the question becomes such, and that current situation for me, you know, that was, for example, self-respect, right? So the anger comes from the fact in that situation where I feel that, you know, my self-respect, unless I do something about it, will be damaged. You know.
So the positive intention, you were looking for that one. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So for, and you know, the sadness is the same way. Sadness, by the way, points that there's a desire to change. Like almost always sadness means that unless, you know, you had a loss in your life, that's a different type of sadness. But generally, if you feel sad, the compass is usually pointing towards the change, right? So it's always a good question to ask, you know, if you feel sad, okay, so what is the change? What, you know, it's already inside of me wanting to happen, but I'm not letting it, right? Mm-hmm. So this is very often where the sadness comes up, right? So and then it becomes neutral, right? So when we're not afraid anymore, and actually being in that neutral is a very good place to be, rather than on sinusoid. Mm-hmm. And one way how to do that is to start, you know, looking at all emotions that they are in essence neutral. They're showing you something.
And they're joy, calls by to the action.
Way, yes. And joy, by the way, is a desire to live, right? So that's what it's pointing towards. So whatever whenever you catch yourself feeling joy, take notice, because these are actually the moments in your life what make life, you know, desirable or really meaningful, right? Mm-hmm. So, and if you start actually seeing those moments, then you start also realizing, like, you know, where's the value in your life, and it's different for different people. Mm-hmm. So for me, I feel a lot of joy being on stage. Some people are, you know, they would rather die than go on stage, right? So and if I want, you know, and then I can design my life so that I could have more potential or more opportunities to be on the stage, for example, a little bit like how this happened today, right? I actually said, hey, you know, if you have something, I would be willing to join and invite me. And that's how you invited me here. Mm-hmm. So kind of, and that brings more joy to my life, and that brings more meaning. So that's how I mean, you know, it's just a needle's pointing somewhere. and we shouldn't be afraid of any of the directions. They're just different.
Yeah, and then the question always becomes, so what do I do about it now that I, you know, kind of have observed it, kind of labeled it, I understood the emotion that actually what it is, identified it, and then, okay, so what do I do now? There is always a choice.
There's always a choice, and sometimes it could be perfectly good and life-supportive choice not to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm. And I, you know, to circle back to where we started, is I like what you actually said about the push and pull, because you were talking about motivation, the away from, as in avoid something, mm-hmm. that's the you know, being pushed mm-hmm. in a certain direction. And the pull is towards, as in, you know, the future that I want, the future that I want to create, the life mm-hmm. that I want to design for myself, the path that I want to follow. So, yeah, there's always those forces inside of us. And, you know, daily we take anything in between 30 to 60,000 decisions daily.
Good.
So
I don't have an archive.
It's yeah, you can go crazy, but we never do, because, you know, half of our thoughts are decisions. So if you don't tame your mind, if you don't take those micro steps, if you don't listen to the push and pull, if you don't listen to your heart, then you might end up living the life that is on the way to burnout. You might living the life that you don't actually want to live. Somebody else's blueprint for you.
Hmm. We're running out of time.
I believe we did half an hour ago.
It's had an hour and a half, actually.
Ah, okay.
So we have the final minute. But like two things. First, we haven't said the name of the school where all this can be taught or learned, or, you know, what you said, the relationship being built where you never leave. And the second, you have like maybe 10 seconds like to say, vote for me.
What? Yeah, the name of the school is Contriber School. So our HQ is in Tartu, currently in Tartu, but I mean, a lot of the things are happening online. So, you know, if anybody found it interesting or any of it, so you
if
can check it out.
If they Googled your name, they would find it.
Yeah, well, probably they also find a lot of other things. But I guess so. I haven't Googled my name for a long, long time, so I should. Mm-hmm. Maybe things come up, but I don't like.
Well, nowadays,
so I can delete the internet.
Nowadays, you don't Google anymore. You go to
ChatGPT
or Claude.
Okay, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Yes, sure. I mean,
which district are you balloting?
Tartu City. Tartu City. Okay. So sure. I mean, that would be great. I mean, and you can always contact me. Happy to have a chat. So, you know, I'm not good at this political stuff yet. So
no, but if you want mindful change, that's the guy.
That's true. So that is one thing what I do want, you know, to contribute towards the political system is, you know, to have more of, you know, that mindset, meaning that not only in a sense. So one of the things what I really, really don't like in the political scene is that we think, or political parties think, that what they do is the only way of doing it, and that's something that I really would want to change, you know. But there's not only one thing and one way. There's different ways. And maybe sometimes combining them can give you a better results than sticking to your, you know, to your own idea and own idea only. So for me, this is common sense. But for some reason, it's not happening. So if there's something I could change, that would be, I think, a good goal to have.
All right. So this is how we wrap it up now.
Thank you for coming on the show.
So vote for Alexander.
Yes.
And go to this Contribor school for life, as I understand. You never graduate. That's the best case.
Yes, you only go with feet first, you know.
Yeah.
Unless you got uploaded to consciousness, yeah. I'm still with that idea, sorry.
But no, thank you for joining us, and
it was
and
a fun
let's
discussion.
See after then a month, yeah?
How something like that. It's a little over a month to the elections, so yeah.
So maybe next time you're going to be here talking some other language.
Oh, yes,
not language of love.
Yes.
But language of change.
How to embrace failure.
Don't program yourself for that. Program yourself for winning.
Or how the local government is now on the boss of like with a heart.
Oh, yes. That
exactly.
would be nice.
All right.
So thank you for having me. It brought me a lot of joy, really.
Oh, that's
thank
where
you.
The compass is showing. All right.